Hello, and welcome to Sentencing Practice Talk, a podcast for federal sentencing practitioners presented by the U.S. Sentencing Commission. In this episode, my colleagues Lori Baker and Peter Madsen go over a topic that's gotten a lot of buzz on the helpline recently, and that is pseudocounts. Lori and Peter go over this term of art, including when you can use them, how they are to be applied properly, and more. Without further ado, here's Lori and Peter.
Hey, Pete, how are you today?
Hey, Lori, I'm doing fine. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good.
So here we are ready to do another podcast. Today we're going to talk about pseudocounts, which is kind of a weird term, right? We don't really see that term anywhere in the guidelines, but it's a term that we use in this industry to describe a couple of different things. And there's been a lot of confusion recently about the use of pseudocounts, when you can use them, how they are to be used properly. I know we're getting a lot of helpline calls on this topic. So we wanted to just have a conversation to see if we can't give people some guidance on what pseudocounts are and when they are supposed to be used.
Sounds like a great idea, because I know even as a former U.S. probation officer, it's confusing. When you use them, how do you use them? I'm hoping we can provide some clarity today.
Awesome. So can you start by telling us what we mean by the term pseudocount?
That is probably the best thing to start off with. Like you said earlier, pseudocounts aren't in the guidelines. If you do a keyword search for pseudo, it's not in there. It really is a term of art that we use to describe when we're going to do another guideline calculation for an additional offense. Either the defendant may be stipulated to something, or he's charged with a conspiracy to commit multiple acts, or there are some other special instructions that might involve pseudocounts. But we're basically doing another guideline calculation for another offense.
So this does not pertain to an actual count of conviction. It's when a calculation is going to be done for some additional conduct, right?
That's correct.
All right. So let's start by talking about when we can actually calculate a pseudocount, because it's really a very narrow application. So let's talk about the few instances where we can actually do this. And I think the first one would be when the count of conviction is a conspiracy count, right?
Exactly. Like under 1B1.2D, we specifically say there a conviction on a count charging a conspiracy to commit more than one offense shall be treated as if the defendant had been convicted on a separate count of conspiracy for each offense that the defendant conspired to commit. That's a mouthful. In other words, we're looking at somebody that pled to a conspiracy and there were 2, 3, 4, maybe even 10 underlying offenses. That's what we're talking about.
Okay, so let's look at an example of that. Say, for example, the count of conviction is conspiracy to commit mail fraud, bank fraud, and wire fraud. What that count actually represents is 3 separate pseudo-counts: conspiracy to commit mail fraud, conspiracy to commit bank fraud, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, right?
Exactly. That's probably the cleanest example I could probably think of as well.
Right. So what are we going to do in terms of that calculation?
So in essence, you're going to do a guideline calculation for each offense of conviction, just as though you had 3 counts of conviction. It's no different. So you might have grouping rules that come into play, or in some cases, if they don't all go to the same guideline, you're going to be doing a guideline calculation for each of those offenses that they conspired to commit.
So when you have a conspiracy count, that's really the first thing that you need to figure out is how many offenses are we actually talking about? Was it a conspiracy to commit one offense or a conspiracy to commit multiple offenses? And that's when that pseudo count strategy would come into play.
Exactly.
So the second place where the guidelines authorize the use of pseudocounts would be in special instructions. And if I remember correctly, we only have special instructions in 3 guidelines, right?
We do. And I think it's very particular because I think sometimes there is confusion where people are in a different guideline and they want to use, you know, a special instruction that's not there. But like you pointed out, there are only 3 guidelines: 2G1.1, which in essence is the sex trafficking involving adults, 2G1.3, which is sex trafficking involving minors, and then 2G2.1, the production of child pornography guideline.
And that special instruction says when the offense involves more than one victim, you would do a calculation as if there were multiple offenses of conviction, right?
Exactly.
So, you know, that's the special instructions are confusing in and of themselves. And we're not really going to dig into that today because that's a whole different podcast topic.
Very true.
But can you give me an example of, let's talk about production of child pornography at 2G2.1. Give me an example of when we would use pseudo counts, when that special instruction would apply.
Right. So say you have a defendant that pled guilty to production of child pornography. The video that he pled guilty to involved two minors, an 8-year-old girl and a 10-year-old girl. You have more than one minor in that offense of conviction. So you'd end up doing a guideline calculation for each of those minors into the 2G2.1 guideline.
So you'd essentially have two calculations of 2G2.1, one for victim, minor victim one, one for minor victim two.
Exactly.
Okay, so then the third example that we have of when you might use pseudo counts would be a stipulation to an additional count. What would that look like?
Right. So also in the 1B1.2 guideline, we under subsection C, we specifically note when there's a plea agreement, whether it's written or made orally on the record, and if that contains a stipulation that specifically establishes the commission of additional offense or additional offenses for that matter, we're going to treat that as though they've been convicted of those additional counts.
I know when I had stipulations, I didn't really treat it as a pseudo count in my brain. It was more like, okay, he's admitted to kind of an additional count of conviction. So I'm not sure I would have used that terminology, but the philosophy is the same. And I know some people do call that a pseudo count. But so those are really the only three circumstances where the guidelines authorize a calculation based on additional conduct or what we're calling a pseudo count.
Exactly.
So let's talk about where the confusion might come in. I know we receive helpline calls from people saying, hey, I've got this indictment that charges a 1-month period. Say we're talking about January 1st of 2025. To January 31st of 2025, the defendant committed 4 bank robberies. So not charged as a conspiracy, charged as just one count of bank robbery, but there's a date range and lots of things might have happened within that date range. I think this is where the confusion comes in because our brains say, hey, during that date range, this individual robbed 4 banks. Can I do pseudo counts? What's the answer to that question, Pete?
The short answer is no. If you open the guideline, you go to 2B3.1, there is no special instruction. There is nothing that allows you or the court, for that matter, to do a pseudo count for if there were 4 bank robberies for the other 3, for that matter. There just is not an option to do that, absent a stipulation like you mentioned earlier, or there's a conspiracy involved, and neither of those apply. You only have one offense of conviction.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can understand why that's confusing because you're reading that count of conviction and you're saying, well, the offense of conviction looks like it's a bunch of things and you want to calculate based on all of those things. But as you said, the guidelines don't provide for a mechanism to do that unless it's charged as a conspiracy or stipulated that all of those bank robberies were committed. And a lot of this comes down to a relevant conduct analysis, which is another piece to the puzzle that, again, we could spend a whole series of podcasts talking about relevant conduct and where it fits into this conversation. So lots of moving parts here, but I think if we just remember that there only are these three circumstances where we can apply pseudo counts, I think that's helpful. What do you think?
I agree. I think pointing out that you either, one, have a conviction charging a conspiracy to commit more than one offense, you have those three special instructions in the various 2G1.1, 2G1.3, 2G2.1, or you have some kind of stipulation pursuant to 1B1.2C. Absent that, you don't have pseudo accounts, period.
Yep. Well, very well said, Peter. What a great way to sum that up. Can you think of anything that we haven't touched on that might be helpful on this topic?
When in doubt, call the helpline. We're willing to help. I mean, this is confusing. I'll just give you a quick example where somebody had called and said, hey, I got this drug case, but, you know, they kidnapped the guy, you know, because they had a drug debt, right? So they kidnapped the guy, stole his drugs, and then, you know, he pled guilty to drug trafficking, and they wanted to do a pseudo count for kidnapping. It's like, in the 2D1.1 guideline, there's not an option to do a pseudo count for kidnapping. Yes, it's something bad that happened. The court can take that into account when fashioning a sentence, but there's not going to be a separate calculation for that additional conduct.
Wow, that's an interesting one. And again, I can see why these are confusing things to figure out, because you're looking at that conduct and you want to make sure you're accounting for all of it. But the guidelines have limited application in some of these circumstances. All right. Well, hopefully that is helpful. And I was going to say the same thing as Pete did. If you ever have any questions about this or any other topic, please reach out to us on the helpline. We're happy to talk through these items with you. But we thank you very much for listening today and look forward to talking with you again soon. Thanks, Pete.
All right, Lori. You're welcome.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Sentencing Practice Talk. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't already to the podcast on iTunes or Spotify to stay up to date. If you've got a question for the helpline or want to access any of the resources discussed in this episode, you can find us at ussc.gov. Please be advised that the information provided by Commission staff is offered to assist in understanding and applying the sentencing guidelines. The information does not necessarily represent the official position of the Commission, should not be considered definitive, and is not binding upon the Court, Commission, or the parties in any case. This episode was produced and published at taxpayer expense. That's all for now. Thanks for listening.